What is up, Anchor Nation? This is your host, Aaron Rollins, coming at you again live and ad-free from Southeast Third, my podcast. Appreciate y'all tuning in once again. Back at it with a grin, or whatever the... That's so stupid. I'm sorry, that was dumb. I was talking to some friends I grew up with recently, and we have some kids from our hometown that were making rap albums and rap songs and stuff like that, and one of them was actually okay. You can listen to it and not be like, what the heck am I listening to? And I feel like that's a good indication that the song's all right. But I was telling them that, and I tried doing that in like my mid 20s. And I always felt like whatever I was saying was just stupid as fuck. And, one of my friends was like, why don't you rap about your mom? I'm sure you could quote her and that would be hilarious. I was like, yeah, actually, you got a point there. Just like, making fun of my mom Eminem style, you know, but not with all the violence and whatever, because I actually care about my mom. But if I were to, like, I guess as a mock song or whatever, just mocking her voice and some of the things she says, problem is that, you know, people that know my mom would think that's funny. Everybody else would probably be like, what the heck is this? So that's just a fleeting fancy that I was just like, yeah, that's never going to work. That's never going to work. But, you know, who knows? I mean, people make all kinds of crap nowadays. You got country people singing pop people singing rap. R&B people singing country. You never know these days. Things are just changing by the month. So the new Dune movie came out. Back to the music thing real quick before we get started. You notice I didn't have a song starting at the beginning of the podcast when I'm in my truck and my truck's off, so... no radio, but I was listening to Weezer, Say It Ain't So, before the song came on. So if you're a 2000s person, you know, not born in the 2000s, but maybe born in the 90s, then you might know Weezer. They're a good band. Yeah, not bad. Anyway, back to the topic of discussion for this podcast. I talk a lot about movies and TV show and Dune 2, you know, that came out, went and watched it with my lady, and I gotta say that, you know, the visuals are spectacular, the CGI, the props, I mean, everything's cool, and the combat scenes are nice, and some of the special effects really hit, but it just felt kind of flat. It felt like the guy, Timothy, whatever his name is, like, there were parts of it as Paul Atreides that he nailed. There's gonna be spoilers in this, by the way. If you haven't watched Dune 2, please go watch it. It's a decent watch. Especially for a cheap ticket, you know. Anyway, so him as Paul Atreides, it felt a little robotic. Him and Batista, they felt kind of programmed, if you will. Like, Batista's always raging and angry and like smashing people, and he's done that for most of his career. And you know, you gotta play to your strengths, and he's definitely good at that. But I don't know. It just, there were parts of it that felt like this is world shattering. You know, reimagining yourself type events you're coming into and experiencing, and it didn't feel like they were experiencing that. It's like you're drinking this poison that is supposed to kill you. You don't die, but you can see events of the future and the past. And in the first Dune, he had like a fight with his mom, and he was like accusing her of being a witch and corrupting him, and he was angry and stuff, but all he did was just shout. And I was like, I gotta see something, man. Like, show me some expressions. Show me some mannerisms or something that sells your anger in this moment. I mean, your whole world is getting turned upside down. Your family was just brutally murdered. Your dad had to commit suicide to escape torture and all this other stuff. And some of that, it was like heavy. And it felt robotic. It felt plain. And, of course, you know, he had to endure some stuff. Like, he gets into these knife fights and he gets stabbed a couple times. And you know that crap had to hurt. And not that he didn't sell that, but it's like, there's parts of it that you really could have done better. And I feel, you know, for over 2.5 hours long, there's only so much you can do. But the directing really has to take point on that and guide these actors to bring out their best performance. And that's my personal opinion on that. And, you know, I can't be the type of person that, like, tears apart everybody's acting and it's like, well, you could have done this better and that better. There's some things that they did really well. How do you say it? Whenever he was confronting his mom, and you know, whenever he was using his power words to, like, command people, that stuff was pretty good. You know, you see some intensity. But there were other parts of it I was like, man, this just feels almost boring. The special effects definitely carried that movie. And some of the battles carried the movie too. And I understand they're trying not to, like, make it hyper violent or have gratuitous violence or anything like that. I get that. You don't want that to be the only thing the movie is about. But you definitely could have done better with some of those big battle scenes. It was really cool, you know, seeing the ships come down and get detonated and all the explosives they were using and then the giant worms that they were calling up. Excuse me. That was all pretty cool effects and stuff like that. But I don't know. For something so spectacularly cinematic and big, it didn't feel like it lived up to it. I give it an A-. You know, it had ambition and it had potential. It could have been better. It could have been better. There were some key acting points that I felt like were kind of meh. They got Zendaya to be his first love interest. And she did some of her roles pretty well, but then it felt like, you know, you put Zendaya in that role because she's known to be a defiant. She's cast type as a defiant actress, or she plays these defiant roles, and she definitely had some defiance in what she was doing in her character. And that all, you know, you could tell that was her her goal was to relay that, to demonstrate that to the viewer. And it just, I don't know, man, it felt, once again, programmed. It feels like a lot of these movies coming out lack substance. They lack depth. And I've said that about a lot of things happening. I don't know if it's directors. I don't know if it's because people have, or actors and actresses have all these conflicts and schedules and stuff because they're trying to do multiple movies at once. What I'd love to see is some stuff like where they did with the Avengers, where they commit to something. And when they commit to it, it's like, this is what you're doing. You can't do anything else while you're doing this. And I would love to see that happen with more things, because it feels like those actors really invest in those roles when they're tied to them that way. And I personally think that that's how you get the best out of people. Of course, you got guys like Daniel Day-Lewis, who is like a method actor, and he goes to great extremes. I don't think you have to go that far. I mean, if you want to, that's your prerogative, but it feels like people that embrace a little bit of that, maybe they wear their costume, you know, outside of rehearsals, or maybe they do some research on the culture, or they read some literature or whatever, like Henry Cavill, he didn't like method act or whatever, but to prepare for Superman, he read the comics. He didn't watch any of the movies or the TV shows. He just read the comics. And you kind of felt like in Man of Steel that he really took on that persona, you know, and that when he was on screen behind in front of the camera, he was really trying to sell the Superman identity. I can't find other ways to describe that, but you get what I'm saying. Anyway, it just feels like I said, I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, that a lot of these, you know, movies are just not as rich as they could be. Like, you got, Goodfellas. Goodfellas was entertaining, but it was also deep. Like, you got these criminals who are risking their futures to make a quick buck, you know, and there's intensity, there's violence, there's drama and suspense, and, you know, all the hallmarks of a good movie. And, you know, this drama that's supposed to be Dune 2, you know, they've been making these movies for over 30 years now. You would think that they would try to capture some of that that depth that it's about. And it seemed to me like they took one direction and just ran with it. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of desert culture that is at the forefront. And I get that. The Fremen are a major player in this story, and the overall idea of the story is to warn people about, you know, government control and interested parties that have significant power, you know, plotting and scheming, you know, and giving up your individual freedoms because of a religious movement and religious fervor. I mean, I get that. It just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like they were pulling from a lot of that Islamic and Judaic desert culture with how they worshipped and how they acted and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, this is the very far future. It's 10,000 years in the future. This should be unrecognizable how these people live and interact and operate. And the languages, of course, the Sardaukar, however you say it, the ones that have like the really deep baritone or really deep bass voice, those were like unrecognizable. The Harkonnens were unrecognizable, but you get to the Fremen and it's like, yeah, I could see this happening. It kind of feels like, you know, some of those folks I met over in Iraq live just like this. You know, I bet if you look back historically, you'd see some examples that you could compare that to. And it's like, this is 10,000 years in the future. You should not be able to recognize any of this stuff. But you can. And I don't know. It felt like they could have been a little more creative in that respect. Something that I had forgotten completely about was how they drain the water out of people's bodies. I'd forgotten all about that. And that was something that felt like a little bit of a spark of creativity. Granted, they didn't come up with that idea on their own. That is from the literature and stuff. But that was, to me, was like a great addition to their way of living. They got to have it. Like, you can't waste any water. You know, somebody's crying and they're like, oh, don't cry. Don't shed your tears, because your body's water is the most precious thing you have. So that was a pretty good piece of how do you call it? It's a good piece of story that they put into the movie. I really enjoyed that. So I watched Dune 1 before I watched Dune Part 2. They're talking about Part 3. I'm not sure when that's going to come out, but whatever. We got bigger fish to fry in the world. I was going through one of my classes and they were talking about some of the conspiracy and sports scandal. And they're talking about the Sochi games back in 2016 and how Russia got exposed for all their cheating. And it just never really occurred to me how much money is involved in all of that. And I found that very surprising that there's just billions of dollars flowing through these athletic games. And something that this university that I'm at is revealing to me is how impactful and powerful sports can be. You know, I've never been a fanatic sports fan. Like, I don't rave at the TV and rage, and, you know, I don't go to these games and get swept up in the moment. But, you know, there are millions of people that do, and there's a lot of money in that. And you come to find out this situation with this doctor called Dr. Rodchenkov or something like that. His first name's Grigory. He was at the center of this exposure for this huge scandal, and it was just incredible. Incredible how much was revealed from his testimony and what he was able to provide evidence of. You know, it's insane. Insane. And I mean, like, stuff like that is still happening today. There's still people that are cheating with blood doping and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I think for me, my first, how do you say it? My first encounter with that was when Lance Armstrong got busted, and they, you know, he had that whole scandal, and then Russia came after that, and it's like, man, what's going to happen next? Well, now they've got men identifying as women competing in female sports, and it's like, when does the buck stop? When do we say enough is enough, and we need to take back some measure of control in this regard of what these sports were meant to do? These sports were meant to bring out the best of the best, not who can scheme their way to the top. You know, in capitalism, I anticipate that. I expect that, because, you know, there's certain laws that are meant to be bent, and then some people break them and get away with it for their entire lives. And when it comes to this sport thing, it's like, yeah, of course there's money involved for you to get your trophy and your championship, but it's the personal pride knowing that you put in the time, you put in the work, you put in the effort, and it was recognized because you competed against people of equal athletic ability, whether it's swimming, whether it's lifting, whether it's running or whatever. And I was like, you know, reading all this stuff, and it just blew my mind how much cheating there comes into the sports industry. You know, we knew about it in baseball. Oh, yeah, let me go back even further than Lance Armstrong. The Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa scandals. You know, I remember Dr. Paula Bounty, one of my teachers, was talking about Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and how Mark McGwire got so jacked after he juiced up. And then you see some of these MMA fighters like Vitor Belfort when they were at peak physiques, when they were taking some sort of substance. And you're like, you know, if that's going to be a thing we have to navigate around, then you should create separate competitions in which substances are allowed under strict regulations, and then other competitions where they're not allowed. And it's like, if you want to juice and you want to compete, then you're going to compete against other juicers that are knowingly juicing. And you come to find out that, you know, that actually is kind of happening in what's supposed to be the no juicing world of sports, the anti-doping world of sports. They're supposed to be not doing it, but almost everybody is. I mean, it's so widespread. It's like, well, hell, why don't y'all just make it legal and then create the sports industry that you should be doing what you're trying to do now that doesn't have any cheating at all? Because right now everybody's just doing it and they're just finding ways to get around it. So just keep what you've got, lift some of those restrictions, and let, you know, athletes use substances that you pre-approve, and, you know, they can use it throughout their entire year or whatever. And then get people that are like, nah, man, that's not something I want to experiment with or try. I'm going to do it the vanilla way. And there are plenty of athletes out there that will do that. And so now you've grown your industry even larger, because now you need even more athletes to compete in these two different spheres. You know, and you can always fluctuate. You can go to, like, you know what, for the next couple of years, I'm going to not use any substances, and I'm going to compete at the regular level. And the education I'm getting is showing that there is a significant performance impact when you get off that stuff, whatever it is. So, you know, I really feel like that's something that in the future, it has to be addressed. You can't keep going the way that you're going. There has to be like a critical point where things tip one way or the other, and you either pull back from it or you're like full speed ahead. This is going to burn this bitch down to the ground. So anyway, that's all I got for you today. I know I just rambled about two totally different things, but I got to get on to studying for this exam I got coming up. Pathophysiology of chronic disease. That's exciting. So until next time, y'all, please continue to hydrate, take care of yourselves, and be careful out there when you're driving on the road, man. The freaking people on the road today are nuts. That's all I've got for you. This has been Aaron Rollins with Southeast Third, and I am signing off.